ole, 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 ole.
Are you not entertained?
Ole, what?
Are you not entertained?
This one's been a long time coming.
Yes.
And no time this week felt more appropriate.
Why? What's this week?
Oh, nothing. Literally nothing is happening.
No. You know what? I'd be actually okay for once if someone said, no, literally nothing is happening. I'm like, what? That's a decent change.
That would be nice.
Nothing's happening. Let's take a break. Let's just take a break.
They say, no news is good news. And there's been a lot of news lately.
But yes, what brings us here today?
The good Ridley Scott. Have we done a Ridley Scott yet? Is this our first? I think it is.
Didn't we do Blade Runner?
No, we haven't done Blade Runner yet.
I mean, we've mentioned Blade Runner.
Oh, we mentioned Blade Runner quite a bit.
Yeah, or didn't we do... Wait a minute. Did we do Alien? I don't know. I feel like we mentioned a lot of his movies.
Yeah, and we did not do Alien yet. I would remember that. Oh, okay. I was thinking about doing Alien for Halloween.
All right, but then no, I think this might be our first Ridley Scott.
Yeah, he's a legend. Especially after his brother passed, he started doing some really insane stuff, which was, it was really unfortunate, his brother's passing, but
yeah,
made for a really dark couple of movies, because I think Alien was the first thing he made after his brother passed, but yeah, wild.
Well, you mean the newer Alien, correct? You're not...
No, the old.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There was it was his, not like Tony Scott, I don't think, right? There was another brother?
Oh. Matt. It was actually his eldest brother, Frank Scott, passed away in 1980. So he got hit twice, actually, with that same tragedy.
I did my research today based on the movie and the historical period.
Yeah, you're definitely more versed in the historical period than I am. I did go on a bit of an obsession spiral with this movie at a certain point. It's a fun one to climb down that spiral.
Yeah.
Especially when you find out that Oliver Reed passed in the middle of production because he was in a bar, which is wild.
Wait, that's how he was passed? That's how he passed?
Yeah, he did. They got him to the hospital, but he didn't make it.
Oh my God, I didn't.
In a bar.
I thought he was like, I never knew that. I thought he died of like natural causes or something, or he was sick at the time of filming. I did not know. Wow, that is, wow. Okay. I did not. I'm speechless.
It was crazy, and the way that they fixed it too was pretty wild, because they used stock footage and some clever framing with a double to finish out his storyline, as in turn with some rotoscope effects of pulling out shots of him with previous lines, and like when you look at it from that perspective of knowing that that's how it was done, that's how they exited Proximo, it's you can kind of see through the cracks a little bit, but when you're watching the movie, it's like, whoa, like you don't even think for a second that was the case.
Yeah, but well, we might as well. So we are, our weapon of choice today is the 2000
clever
historical epic film Gladiator.
Yeah, an utter classic, definitely deserving of its barrage awards. It was one of those many films throughout recent history that have just taken the Oscars by storm and won everything. So very deservedly. So this was a fantastic flick.
And of course, the sequel coming out, Gladiator 2,
which, and we'll see.
Well, so I got to say, so this is one of my favorite movies.
Same. Gladiator. Hard same.
I do like it. I know, like, I don't know.
Which is exactly where my skepticism comes from. It's one of the greatest movies ever made. One of those things that's like, why would you touch that? Why would you tap back into that?
I think if you can get some money, but
yes,
that's how a lot of it goes around. Render the salad unto Caesar, as Archer once said. Anyway.
I love it.
What I think is interesting, have you ever had some like pushback in the film or artistic community of people not, or thinking Gladiator is overhyped or not?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. No, I've definitely heard of people saying that it is overhyped. And I can even actually understand that to a degree. I personally disagree, but given how many accolades it's got, anytime anything gets that kind of acclaim, you can understand people saying, all right, that's overkill.
Yeah.
For example, Fury Road. I love Fury Road, but I kind of agree that it was like it cleaned up too much.
You clean up too much?
Oh, yeah.
That's insane.
I agree. I definitely think so.
But yeah, so this, we're talking about the first Gladiator. And no, when you were saying too, like the sequel, I think it's interesting to me that we're kind of going like the Crystal Skull route here with this. It took so long to make a sequel, which makes me think, did anyone really want the sequel, or was this something that kind of happened because of the rise of like social media?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you bring up Crystal Skull, because it's like something that had such a perfect ending in both cases. Like the ending of Last Crusade, that riding off into the sunset.
Yeah.
Gladiator with the utter, like, I can't even honestly think of a much better ending than Gladiator. Perfect.
I mean, essentially, the spoilers abound. We're going to get into spoilers if you have not.
If you haven't, this movie is 24 years old. If you haven't gotten around to it at this point.
Oh, God, it's 24 years old. Oh, my God, soon to be 25.
Yeah, wild.
I can remember seeing this in the theater.
Oh, yeah.
The first time it came out. This was back when, you know, by theater standards today, the theater I saw this in would not be considered a good theater in terms of like luxury and you know, the accoutrement that go along with it.
Spring coiled up into your butt cheek, piece of gum.
You had the sticky floors.
Yeah.
You had the, you know, the old sort of like squeaky seats with like, and there wasn't stadium. The stadium seating was kind of non-existent.
Yeah.
For me in the movie theater I saw this in. This was like an old school, like 80s, 70s style movie theater, to put it.
Good old Southland 9 for myself. The waterfront kind of wasn't much of a thing yet. This was around, so.
No. But no, I am curious, like, did this get more fame again, you know, through, you know, did this go the almost like the Terminator route? I mean, it was famous. It was a hit when it first came out.
It absolutely did take the box office by storm.
Yeah, and took the critical and box office success. Absolutely.
Which is a rare, honest to God, it is a bit of a rare thing for that to happen anymore.
Yeah, and I am curious, like, did this gain the ability to be made, a sequel made for it, kind of like how, you know, when the first Terminator came out, it didn't do well, but then VHS sales got, you know, it started to build a following. Did this build a following? I think we mentioned it in the memes episode.
Mm-hmm.
Did this build a following through the quote that you started with, "Are you not entertained?" Like, I felt like more people knew the quote. We were at that point where more people know that than the actual movie.
I think that this is one of those ones where it does have an edge of that, but I think it hit so hard when it was released, and so many people saw and knew this movie, that I think that this one kind of climbs its way out of that, though it's in vast danger of having that happen in the future, which, you know, the sequel coming out will breathe life into that, so I don't think it's in any danger, but yeah, it's just absolutely, that episode was fun. I did enjoy those kinds of discussions, but
yeah.
I think that this one was such a huge, like you said, critical and like public acclaimed film, that it kind of is so well known that it's not super super in danger of that.
Well, yeah, definitely commercial grossing close to $500 million worldwide,
which is for that time even too is wild numbers.
Against a budget shocking like $103 million, a lot 20 years ago. I'm still kind of shocked it didn't cost more even then, but
yeah, especially considering like the cutting edge tech, like they kind of were doing the principles of what the volume stage stuff is now. It's like like they were on a much 24 years earlier simple scale of that, but they were still, you know, knocking on that door, as it were.
Yeah.
And like they built half of the Colosseum and did a lot of crazy things with rotational shots and stuff that really challenged the visual effects of things, and as well as the practicals. It was kind of tipping the blade on both ends, as it were, with that. So it's as far as like how this movie was made, it is deserving of the acclaim. As far as the script, I would say equally so. One of those things that just hits on multiple cylinders.
So funny story with the script that I'm assuming this is true. I mean, Russell Crowe said it. I don't know why he would lie about it. But like, there was a time where towards the beginning where they had to give everyone on production a day off.
Yeah.
An entire day off, because they didn't have a script, or like they didn't know what they were going to shoot the next day. They had to like sit down and like, okay, what's next? What's the script? What's the story? Certainly not something you would ever recommend.
I don't know if I believe that. That's almost too wild to be true. Like,
no, there is an interview that he gave, Russell Crowe did. I think it was when he was doing an interview for, oh God, with Ryan Gosling. It's like a 70s kind of.
Yeah, the Nice Guys.
What is it?
Nice Guys?
The Nice Guys. Yes, I was about to say The Other Guys. I'm like, that's not it.
Nah, that ain't it.
No, The Nice Guys. Yes, I think it was for that. He was just giving an interview for that movie. And then I think someone brought up Gladiator.
Yeah.
And he just told the funny story of like, not only did we not know anything that we were going to shoot, but we ended up winning Best Picture that year.
So that's insane, if that's true.
Talk about, you know, talk about like lightning in a bottle type moment.
Yeah. Well, this is also like people joke in film school about, you know, make quote unquote making things cinematic. This is one of those ones that coined a, I don't even know if I would call it a cliche, but like a laughable moment in making fun of college filmmakers in The Hands Through Wheat. Like, oh, you want to make something look cinematic? Just find a wheat field and run your hands through.
Yeah, like, just find a wheat field and go through it. Well, and that, I mean, you have to say that's a testament to, whether you like the movie or not, that is a testament to its staying power. It entered, when it came onto the scene, it entered our lexicon, our culture.
Yeah.
You know, even it, like, because like that, just things like that. Or you want to, like you said, the joke of the hand through the wheat, the famous quote, are you not entertained? Stuff like that.
I will say the line delivery of when Commodus forces him to take his helmet off in the Colosseum, and he delivers his, the line of his name, best delivered line in anything ever. It's amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean this, you know, this wins Best Picture. This win, Russell Crowe wins Best Actor, Best Lead Actor. I think Joaquin Phoenix was also nominated for Best Supporting Actor, but I don't think he got it.
So, interesting for sure. I mean, Joaquin came out of like a family dynasty of actors with his brother River Phoenix.
Yeah.
Who tragically passed at a young age. But
now that one I know is correct. Yes, that one did. I am familiar with.
Yeah, and I didn't know this until recently, not to sidetrack us, but I did not realize that actually occurred in Johnny Depp's nightclub.
That one did?
Yeah. So that I thought was kind of interesting. But neither here nor there. We can get into that one another time.
But yes. So if you've never seen Gladiator, we're in what is considered at the time, and if we'll set like the historical scene here for a bit. This takes place at the end of what's known as the Pax Romana.
Yeah.
Or the tail end of the Pax Romana in the Roman Empire, or known as like the Roman Peace. And this is considered, you know, the height of the empire, kind of like the golden age of it. And Marcus Aurelius is the emperor, played by Richard Harris.
Beautifully played by Richard Harris.
Yeah.
Also, and Marcus Aurelius is a very notorious historical figure. I mean, he's often quoted as this shroud of wisdom, these mm-hmm. great quotes and inspirational life metaphors and things like that. So, I mean, no small feat to give that some justice.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. I mean, a very and a historical figure, obviously. He was an emperor of Rome. We still, to this day, and I think it's even gotten popular again, his meditations, his philosophies, Stoicism.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I think that's kind of come back a little bit now. And these were, his meditations as an emperor, these were not, it was basically like just his journaling, essentially. Like, there was never something he intended for people necessarily to read. It was just his way of trying to make sense of his role in the empire and what, you know, he could do, what he couldn't do. I have read them. They do have a lot of insight to it. So if you are interested, if you know, if you're strange like I am and interested in history.
Do you own a copy of those by chance?
Do I own a copy? I do not own a copy of it, no.
I was going to say, I'm a bum those if you got them.
Yeah. No, I would usually just take it out from the library.
Gotcha. A library man. Like it.
But yeah, so we're in that period of time. We're talking about 180 AD, around that time period, I think.
Yeah. Have you heard this joke that went around like just a couple of years, like a year or two ago, with like girlfriends? It was like a TikTok and Instagram thing where like the joke was making fun of like your boyfriends for like being obsessed with the fall of the Roman Empire.
Oh yeah, with the Roman Empire. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I found that hilarious, considering we're covering that topic this week.
Well, we're covering the movie, which, you know.
Yes, but it still centers around that same basic concept.
Where did that even come from? Like, where do some of these things come from is always my
question. I guess it's a fairly common thing, and I don't know if it's somewhat tied to Gladiator, but, like, dudes generally are pretty into the Roman Empire. I mean, I know I am personally. I can't speak for large portions of the populace, but...
Well, I think one, because it's so, you know, far distant in the past.
Also, you can say that the Roman Empire does have interesting parallels to the American dynasty that we're currently living through.
Well, yeah, I mean, so does like any major civilization throughout history.
Very true.
You know, you can look at that through a lot of things. I think too, it's like there's a lot of stuff that we do now that started in, you know, when you hear like people say Western civilization, this is one of the progenitors of it is the Roman Empire, you know. How, you know, the fact that we have roads or the idea of a town, all of our sports today, like stadiums and stuff like that, come from. Now, of course, the Romans borrowed a lot from like other places like Greece and stuff like that. So it's not, you know, it's not 100% accurate to say that they were the creators of it all, but they certainly, Rome has a lasting impact on us to this day in certain things.
A lot of things that the Roman Empire built are still standing, which is insane.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And they were big on records. Now, credit, a lot of their records have a slant to it. They're looking at it through Roman eyes. But a lot of the historical evidence that we have from that time period comes from, you know, Roman, that's the word I'm looking for, not record keepers. There is an actual term for it, but
archiving.
So yeah, it's big archiving. Yeah. I forget
the
specific term. But yeah. A lot that we know about that time in history comes from Roman accounts.
Yeah.
And just, I don't know, just the outfits are cool. Wouldn't you want to, like, you know, be wearing the armor?
Dude, who wouldn't?
But yes, Gladiator, certainly, I think for me, this is where my interest in Roman history.
Oh, for sure. It kicked in the door for me.
Yeah.
It's such a good revenge story. It's such a good, it inspires like deep senses of honor, which I think hits a chord with most guys. Like every guy wants uphold, or at least every guy I care about being around wants to have like some sense of honor and propriety and like uphold a large group in a collective sense of purpose. And I think that's where this movie tends to hit a chord with a lot of dudes.
Yeah, no, this definitely is a movie more geared toward men, or at the very least, you know,
anything that has such a strong sensibility of war, you know, I do know a lot of women who are very into this movie too. So it is designed for guys, but it definitely, you know, went beyond that.
It's the men are definitely kept in mind as part of the target audience. Like this is not a family picture, you know. This is not, oh, hey, let's take the kids to go see Gladiator.
Yeah.
Even then, this is an adult movie. Obviously.
It's for the person who has any, you know, past story where they've been wronged, where they've been put down, they feel this sense of purpose to go beyond that and fight back.
That was definitely a demographic they were like had in the forefront of their mind when they were making this movie.
Yeah, it set the fuse afire with a bunch of like tons of other movies in the similar arena came out after this. I mean, you have 300, King Arthur, Troy, the big epic of Troy we've talked about a few times. The early and mid 2000s was ablaze with movies of this vein.
Oh yeah, because immediately like a year later you got Lord of the Rings comes out, so you have that epicness, that epic scale again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you always have that where if one movie does well, something does well, and this is not just exclusive to filmmaking. One thing does well and everyone will then come along to try to
emulate, you know, and ride the wave.
Yeah, and be like, okay, they'll try to reverse engineer or, you know, do an autopsy and see like, okay, what worked? Why did it work? What do we do?
Yeah.
We're going to do this. We're going to do something. and then you completely miss the reason that made it work in the first place. But also, too, I've always said the moment you try to do something like it, you're already
in a status of emulation and not creation.
Yeah. There's a difference between, yes, being inspired and just completely emulating something.
Yeah. If you're riding the coattails, you're already missing the point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the all around cast of this, we've discussed obviously Russell Crowe, obviously Jim Hansu. Yeah, God, like what a line delivery! I'll never get over it. It's so good. A career making line delivery. I would dare to say. Like,
yeah, you have Joaquin Phoenix as Commodus, who is also a real emperor,
and it's incredibly difficult to, I will say, to play somebody designed to be hated so viciously and do it so well and not have it completely destroy your life.
Yeah. Well, it's a testament to Joaquin Phoenix's work as an actor.
Yeah. I mean, no slouch for sure.
Yeah. Another one that I think goes, and who's also back in the sequel, Connie Nielsen as Lucilla.
Yes. Yeah.
I think an amazing performance.
If I'm not mistaken, she's one of the only returning characters.
She's one of the few, yeah.
I mean, obviously the movie's not out yet. We don't know for sure, but...
But yeah, I think there might be a few people who are still returning, but yes, she is one of the few that would be a returning character. I think Gracchus, so he will
returning,
I believe. I think he'll still be in it as well, if I remember from looking at the trailer. But yeah, there is not a bad performance in this movie by any actor.
And, you know, I give a lot of acclaim to Blade Runner as being... like the final cut of Blade Runner, the definitive version, as being one of the greatest movies ever made. I will say it is hard for me to even say that because Blade Runner is so perfect in so many ways.
Yeah.
I think that Ridley Scott topped it with this movie, and I think this is the only instance where Ridley got that much better than himself at his best.
Oh yeah, I mean that's a lot. Man, I'm shocked you saying that coming from Blade Runner.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say that because I genuinely love Blade Runner that much. But
yeah,
I think that Gladiator is definitely Ridley's best movie.
I mean, it has everything. It's not a surprise that it was a commercial success too, looking back. But it has everything, at least at the time, that you wanted in a movie. It's got the action. It's got the adventure. It's got the betrayal.
It has the coolest helmet you've ever seen in a movie.
You know, it does. Yes, the costume design, the music, which...
Hans Zimmer's score took the industry by storm. Nobody was ready for that.
No, this to me was when I first learned about Hans Zimmer was this movie.
No, he was definitely around before this, but like this like blew him up on the... Like if at this point, if you didn't know his name, you weren't paying attention to anything.
Yeah. So yeah, the score, of course, is operatic. I mean, I actually even will, you know, have it and listen to it sometimes.
Yeah.
Every now and again.
It's so relaxing. It's hard, like in some of its more somber pieces, like it's hard not to keep coming back to that score and just listen to it when you're trying to, like, you know. So I put anybody who knows me knows I put a lot of cinematic music on to just concentrate, and this is one I continuously come back to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You always got to think like how to come up with that.
Yeah. Well, he was still in the process of building it at the time, but his studio is one of the most creatively inspiring places I've ever seen.
You've actually seen it, no? Or
I've not seen it in person. I've not seen it in person. I know people who have seen it in person, and I desperately want to be there.
A guy who knows a guy who went to the doctor once.
I won't use her name on the air, but, you know, did an internship there for a summer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, very jealous of her.
Obviously cut this out.
Yeah.
But is it true that there's like, I don't know, how do I describe it? His creative studio is like, got like some adult things going on.
I wouldn't doubt that. I don't know for sure, but most of my knowledge is technical of his place.
Yeah, okay. Most of it, purely scientific.
Purely academic.
Yeah. Nocturnal activities.
Yeah. Eyes wide shut. It's the shooting locations for this. Like, you talk about globetrotting. I mean, all over Malta, you know, Morocco, all the way Pinewood. You know, if you want to know a movie has some sort of scale to it, if it's shot in Pinewood Studios, it's a safe bet.
This is the first time I ever heard, too, about Pinewood Studios and how it's like
huge, massive.
Biggest, Yeah.
It's a if I'm not mistaken, Pinewood Studios was a converted World War II facility for like the actual like British Air Force, like some of the biggest bombing planes that were ever built.
That sounds about right. I honestly don't know, but that I would you could fool me if that sounds that you know what you're talking about.
It was made famous, if I'm not mistaken, Pinewood Studios was made famous for a lot of the work that were done on the Bond movies. I believe, I don't remember exactly the first Bond movies. I want to say the ones in the 80s sounds right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's they're most notorious for the Bond movies, and then obviously the Dark Knight trilogy picked up off of that. And a lot, basically, if anything has any kind of set building to a ridiculous scale, pretty much the only place in the world to go, at least up until the last few years, was Pinewood Studios.
Yeah.
It was the only place big enough to handle it.
One of the things I think I love about this movie the most, like looking back on it, there are definitely, here's one thing I wanted to say before, that this is the movie that got me like interested not only in Roman history, but just history in general.
Yeah.
I discovered I enjoy learning about history. And I get that there's historical inaccuracies in it.
Oh, totally, for sure. Like, yeah, totally for sure. It. I mean, it's a piece of pop cinema to a large degree. So of course it's not 100% accurate.
So I always get, there's part of me that always gets a little perturbed when I see, oh, there's so many videos out there now about historians and how they, you know, debunk and say, well, it would have been like this, it would have been like that. And I'm like, okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
What, I don't know. My thing is, if the movie's good, it's good. And if it at least piques my curiosity into wanting to learn the true history, then I think it's done its job.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily have to have it. And I also will nod ahead and be like, okay, that makes sense. Why not do that? Why make that change for the script if it's not going to affect anything? Why not keep it more historically accurate? Sometimes you just can't. Sometimes it's a matter of money, or sometimes the story could just end up being too boring.
Yeah.
If you don't jazz it up a bit. And again, this is meant to be entertainment. But this was definitely that movie that did that for me. And I think, you know, anytime, always take any, if you're going to do a constructive criticism or use it as a teaching tool to say, okay, here's what's accurate, here's what we know, here, this is completely made up, whatever. I think do it through that lens of care and wanting to do it right, not necessarily, you know, wanting to like rip it apart and tear it a new one and, you know, salt the earth with it.
We talked about Gladiator being superior to Blade Runner in a lot of ways. It's hard to ignore the cinematography of Gladiator.
Oh, yeah. Now, you saying that superior in Blade Runner, do you think... I don't know. That sounds like fighting words.
People will for sure come after me for that one, but I'll go ahead and say it. It's the truth. And you know, Cronenweth passed away. He left a lasting legacy with Blade Runner as a piece of cinematography. There's no questioning how great it is. I'm just saying, after that point, to even reach that same caliber is insane.
Yeah.
And
I know you don't gotta,
I will say that the cinematography of Gladiator is definitely in the same ball field as Blade Runner. There's no, like, there just is no question for me.
Okay. Yeah. I think you could definitely say that it's in the same ball field. Especially, I've always said it looks like an old time. It looks like it has that I've ever seen those paintings, I think from like 17th or 18th century paintings of like the Roman Colosseum or anything like that.
I consider it in a similar vein of the way they went about it. So like Blade Runner used a lot of atmosphere, a lot of low light in vast quantities, like using limited light sources, but a load of them all over a very huge set. And Gladiator had a lot of very similar scenes that used that same philosophy, obviously because Ridley had that experience in his back pocket and how to do things, but they took it tenfold and amped it up, but didn't do it in a way that shot that philosophy in the foot. They upped the ante in all the right ways. And that's why I consider the two linked.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. I think like when I look at some of the shots in this, it looks like something that you would see as a painting in the Louvre. That's the best way I can describe it. Like I particularly remember it's like the wide shot of Maximus fighting. I think the guy's name is Titus or Titus.
Yeah.
It's the guy who wears the it's like a one-on-one fight that he has and the tigers come out and there's like a wide shot that they're fighting.
Yeah.
And just the way like you see the Colosseum in the background. background and like the way the sun rays are coming through, I think that's like just the way it is. It just mimics the atmosphere.
Like using insane amounts of diffusion, like throwing tons of aerosol or smoke into the air for so many of these scenes, and like bleeding light, connecting it with the visual effects in a lot of places where sources of light in the background are added in, but at like the perfect angle and done justice. It's like John Matheson, the cinematographer on this, who is back for the sequel, obviously knocked it completely out of the park. Like he's got a number of other really great credits to his name. I mean, he was on Logan. He did the 2004 Phantom of the Opera, which was, it's gorgeous. I mean, he's got a hell of a career under his belt.
Yeah.
But yeah, I truly cannot speak enough of the visuals of the original Glider. Tall order for a sequel to come in and try and be part of that same repertoire.
Yeah, I am interested to see like what they're gonna do with the sequel.
I walk in with as open a mind as I can, tapping into one of the greatest movies ever made that I don't think needs a sequel, but we'll see how they do with it. The themes of corruption, power, you know, Commodus is such a perfect embodiment of this like weak evil that just
like a snake weaving his way through all this. Yeah, from what I can have remembered from just, you know, my interest in history, he definitely was someone who was like that. I believe if I remember right, that he once tried to emulate himself as like Hercules. So that was kind of, you know, and I think he's the only emperor to actually like fight in the arena. He actually does fight because he wants to, you know, prove that he's a strong man, but really not.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it? My one history teacher in like seventh grade says, so Commodus, or as I like to call him, Commodus. You know, like you're going on the commode.
I love it. That's fantastic.
Just to give a sense of like, okay, this guy wasn't
a real piece of
yeah. certainly compared to someone like Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah. The back to back nature of the vast differences in leadership is bewildering.
Which is strange because I think Marcus Aurelius, I mean, he was his son and wanted him to be the next emperor. He wanted to create like a dynasty, which is very strange compared to like the figure we think of today. Again, you know, people are complex. You're never going to be just any, maybe one thing. But usually how it worked was the emperor would handpick like a successor, but someone who was usually not related. It was usually whoever was the best fit for the job. At least I think.
Yeah.
That's how it went. So that was something that was always kind of strange.
But it's definitely more interesting in a grab for power type scenario.
Yeah.
That's, you know, we've talked before, those creative liberties can maybe stray from the actual reality of a situation, especially where history is concerned. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as long as it's not deviating too far and only in ways that do amp up and make things for the betterment of the story, it's a tricky balance. It's there's no perfectly right or wrong answers there, but it's a tightrope walk, to say the least.
No. And I know that, you know, it all comes down to making that story work. So if we go through like the script a little bit again, knowing that story, that there were times they didn't know what they were going to shoot.
Yeah.
So they had to.
That's still wild to me. You know,
they were certainly thinking on their feet.
It's absolutely insane.
It is a simple sort of, you know, it's the revenge story. It almost has that Count of Monte Cristo sort of thing going on. You know, you have Edmond Dantès who gets betrayed, right? Betrayed by one of his friends. Obviously, Commodus and Maximus were never truly friends. But then you have that whole sort of thing set in motion, sent to prison. He becomes a slave, becomes a gladiator, comes back to take his vengeance on it. He doesn't, like, you know, he doesn't let the people break. He doesn't let the outside world break him, even though he comes desperately close when his son and wife are murdered.
He essentially gives up on life, and we see it in like this crazy lapse of real time.
Mm-hmm.
They do such a great job with that sequence. Not that there is a bad sequence in this film, but that you feel the pain in that, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's interesting because Maximus's arc, if you will, I almost want to say I don't know if he quite has an arc. I think this is sort of the what's the teddy bear, the British teddy bear movie?
Paddington,
yes, thank you. So what you said, that Paddington, like where the fuck are you going with this?
the title of the episode, Paddington and Gladiator, the same movie.
Paddington and Gladiator. Well, no. The reason I bring that up is because Paddington does not arc in his movies.
Interesting.
He's just a good example. But the people around him do. And for me, I think that's sort of what we kind of have here with Maximus. Yes, he certainly is trying to be a more complex human being, so he's going to have some differences. But the man who he is at the beginning is still the honorable man that he is at the end. He certainly, though, just wants to kill Commodus before he can join his family in the afterlife. But if you look at it, he kind of changes the way people perceive themselves and perceive the world, you know, like he has an effect. He ultimately will have an effect on Lucius anyway.
Yeah.
But regardless, his stance against Commodus, against tyranny, changes the way that, you know, even Proximo, Oliver Reed's character, tells him, win the crowd. You got to win the crowd.
Proximo's lines, every single one of them, magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't even need to say anything about this movie because it stands so far above like anything I could say about it. Like, you know, it's just, it's perfect.
Yeah. And that's where I think the Paddington example came in. It's just the arc is more about how they change the surrounding cast, the ensemble, rather than the change coming internally within the character. You know, like if you were doing more of a change here, there would be something with, oh, just let go of your vengeance. You know, usually when you see like a vengeance thing, there always has to be that moment where the character lets go of it, because if they don't, it's going to destroy them.
But in this instance, there's a larger game at play where there's more at stake than just the well-being of the character. Whereas if Maximus does let go of his vengeance and his pain, the betterment of Rome and every single one of these characters falls as a result. Yeah. So that's where I think that this one stands apart in an interesting play for all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this is definitely, given even the fact that the script was not written immediately, those checkpoints are still there, the broad strokes that make a good story.
Yeah.
And you can certainly see that, you can certainly have the act breaks are easy to pick out in this because the locations change.
Yeah.
Pretty, you know, you have him, that opening. I mean, let's say this has, before we finish up, I just wanted to say this has one of the best opening scenes, battle sequences, just to start you off.
By far. And like at that low light dusk too, like the visual impact of all of that and the way they contrast color too, it's like that blue dusk against the fire arrows and everything, just the use of color and realism through all that is just so sharp in your eye. Like it's amazing.
No, yeah. Yeah, I know. And you have the music in that opening scene. That
it's hard to go wrong with Hans at his kicking in the door phase.
Yeah. And I don't know if they ever had necessarily catapults of that grade in the Roman Empire, but damn, when I believe they actually like set fire to the forest that they shot in, if I remember correctly, because I think they were going to tear the trees down anyway for something like to help with like new growth, I think, or something. So
interesting.
Like, we'll do it.
That's interesting. Don't quote me. I didn't know that one.
Don't quote me on that one, but I know they did actually launch some of those catapults.
Wild. Oliver Reed's death.
Mm-hmm.
He did actually, the clinical reason for his death was actually because of a heart attack, but it was from a night of heavy drinking at the bar in Malta.
It was Malta bars, man. Malta always seems to be a big production place, or at least it used to be.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, just honest to God, just endlessly quotable too. It's like we've talked about movies in the past, but it's hard to find a movie that is of such like audience popularity, critical acclaim, endlessly quotable. It hits on so many different cylinders. Perfect cinematography, unbelievable sound design. You know, nowadays everything has great sound design, but like something to hit this peak where not everything had perfect technicals, you know, a perfect story, that perfectly crafted story and amazing performances. Yeah. It was rare at this time to get something to hit on this many cylinders.
Yeah, this was certainly, I'm just looking at this from like my own memories. This was definitely the first movie we ever bought on DVD.
Yeah.
And it, I remember seeing, like, when we played it, I'm like, oh, there's like special features. What is that? And they had a ton of deleted scenes, which makes sense because of all the production challenges that they had.
Well, now that you tell me too that they were reworking the script so heavily, that makes a lot of sense as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know there was a lot that they had to rework script wise, given, you know, everything that was going on. But what was I going to talk about? Oh, like the costume design in this, the production design, the prop making, you know, you literally think that like the army that it took to craft all that and get it on screen.
We also didn't mention that in the early scenes with Proximo, when he's discussing the giraffes with warden from The Mummy, two of his greatest performances.
Yes. I totally forgot he was in this.
Yeah. Super great little cameo from him.
Yes. Come. Step over the threshold.
Just haggling. Love it.
So good. Yeah. No. And I know from looking at the trailers, I know there's way more CGI.
Yes. Especially in the case of the Colosseum. But like, for the time, it's like incredibly well done. Like, you know, if you didn't know that it was utilized, some shots could honestly get away with being photoreal. Like, it's so well done.
I think what's interesting is I am curious to see, I'm assuming all the animals that are going to show up in this are going to be completely CGI, which I understand.
Yes.
But man, those real tigers in that fight sequence add to it. Now, I don't know if they'll be bringing, I'll be shocked if they bring real ones in or some form of real animal.
I know that they're not bringing rhinos in there, that's for sure.
I cannot say if that ever happened in the actual Colosseum. I can say that in the second one, they're going to do the naval battles, which did actually happen. They did actually stage naval battles.
The fact that they were technologically capable of filling the bottom layer of the Colosseum with water to the point of being able to sail small ships in battle is historically, from a historical standpoint, is insane. Like,
oh yeah. Oh no, 100%. I mean, and they start, I think it was Emperor Vespasian. Oh no, it was actually three that kind of like oversaw it. So Vespasian, we're talking about 70 to 72 AD, Titus and Domitian, but between the three of them, they sort of oversaw the construction of the Colosseum that still stands to this day. Of course, now it would have taken a lot of people power to get it done, and slavery was firmly entrenched in the Roman Empire.
Oh, for sure.
So there was the back of a lot of hard labor going on to build that thing.
Yeah, not the greatest of conditions.
No, absolutely not. But for it to still stand to this day, or what's left of it.
So it's a feat of a ancient society.
Mm-hmm. Wild. Yeah, no, there's that. And I think you talked about what is it with... this definitely, even though the fact that it came out around the same time, like a year or two before Lord of the Rings, this definitely has that Lord of the Rings feel to me, you know, even though it's more based in actual history.
Yeah, the epic nature of its story, for sure. It hits a visual and storytelling caliber that's tough to achieve.
Yeah, it has that quality of a fairy tale kind of in it. Obviously much more violent and darker, but you know, it's definitely there.
Yeah, and it's one of those ones I truly cannot say enough about. It's a heck of a cinematic experience, and you just don't get stuff like this anymore.
Not to go back to the music again, but I think that's one thing. The music, the score is a main key point to the movie. It certainly helps tell the story rather than just kind of being in the background, which some movies you'll see today, a lot of them will just do that. This is one you definitely want to hum and like sing, or like, you know, that you'll be, it'll stick in your mind after you've watched it.
Yeah. It's one of those ones, like, it just honestly does kind of live with you once you've seen it. It's hard to get it out of your mind.
No, agreed. Yeah. If you haven't watched it, highly recommend it.
And how? How have you made it this far in life?
You sing good.
I had a funny bit I wanted to throw in there. I can't for the life of me remember what it was, though.
Is anything with like one of the other like actors in it, or like one of
I
the
thought
scenes?
Of it in like the first 10 minutes. I should have written it down. It's gone. It's not in there.